This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Autumn is an enchanting time for those of us who welcome the chill in the air and the taste of hot apple cider. But for some of us, it's hands down the busiest, most crucial time of the year. Of course, I'm talking about farmers and the harvest. But there are some farmers who mark this time by giving us not only the produce they've grown, but a true fall experience. Harvest festivals not only give us that charming walk between the apple trees or through the pumpkin patch, they also provide additional revenue for an already active family farm. Here at All In, we wanted to get a sense of just how important these fall festivals are to these Indiana farms, so we invited a few of them to talk with us today. Joining me now is Ruth Ann Roney of Tuttle Orchards in Greenfield, Indiana. She's the fourth generation of the Tuttle family who founded the farm in the 1920s and is now the boss when it comes to day-to-day administration at the farm. Ruth Ann, welcome.
Thank you.
I know this is a busy time of year for you, so thanks for taking the time with us here. I have a lot of questions about Tuttle's role as a fall destination, but I want to give everyone an idea of the diversity of your produce. You don't have time to name everything. That would take the whole show, but maybe give me the abbreviated range of fruits and vegetables you grow and sell there.
Yeah, so we farm about 250 acres just east of Indianapolis, between Indianapolis and Greenfield. And we grow, of course, we're known primarily for apples. We grow about 50 acres of apples, but we also grow about 30 acres of pumpkins, as well as a lot of summer vegetables. So people know us for our sweet corn and tomatoes, and then we grow several other things that go along with that, like cucumbers and peppers and some of these other things. We also farm in what's called high tunnels, which are basically greenhouses that are over the top of the soil, and so we can plant in the ground, but they provide some protection for winter and some at the beginning and the end of the season. So we grow both tomatoes in those, as well as a lot of different, in the winter months, we grow lettuce and spinach, kale, a lot of those cold crops that we can grow through the winter months. So yeah, we also grow a lot of squash. We grow, we're pretty, in the spring, we do quite a few, not necessarily fruits and vegetables, but greenhouse and flowers as well. So we're a pretty diversified horticulture operation.
Let's talk about the apples. How many kinds of apples do you grow?
Yeah, that's a good question. It changes by the year. So I think right now we have about 30 varieties that are in production, which meaning that we're currently picking from those trees, but we're always planting new orchards in preparation for when the ones we have right now are not. And so probably total we have more like 35 or 40 varieties that have been planted at the orchard.
And I mean, that takes time, right, to sort of grow a new kind of apple, a new variety. I mean, how much planning goes into that part of it?
Yeah, there's a lot of planning that goes into an orchard, just because you can't just imagine today I want to plant an apple tree. Well, if you want to plant one apple tree, it's no problem. But if you want to plant, you know, 5,000 apple trees, you have to order them. We don't plant seeds. We plant trees because they won't come true to variety if you plant seeds. So we work with a nursery, several different nurseries that graft and bud apple trees. And so basically how it works is you would maybe 3 to 5 years before you want to get the trees, work with them, order the trees. They begin to get the varieties and strains that you want on the different rootstocks that you want, those kinds of things. And then the trees would actually come to us 3 to 5 years later. And then after we plant them and trellis them and take care of them for the first 3 to 5 years, it's then that we get an actual crop from them. So it's probably can be an 8 to 10 year process in the time frame from when we decide we want to have an orchard to when we're actually picking apples from those trees.
Wow. What is your personal go-to apple variety?
My favorite is called Gold Rush, which is actually a newer variety that was developed at Purdue in conjunction with some other land-grant universities in other states. But it's a variety that a lot of people have heard of. We kind of call them the ugly apples because they don't look as pretty, but they have a really good taste to them. And they don't ripen until like the beginning of November, so they're a pretty late apple.
So that brings me to the experience. So how much of your annual business depends on not only the sale of your produce, but people actually coming and experiencing the farm the way they do in the fall?
Yeah, so we are, like I said, about 95% retail. So unlike some farms that would raise produce to grow to send to the grocery stores. We do not do that. We almost everything we grow is sold right here on site. There's a we maybe sell to a few other farm markets, but almost everything is sold right here. And so we're really passionate about having people come to the farm, experience agriculture, be able to have that experience here, create memories with their families. I often hear people say, you know, I came here when I was in kindergarten, and they're now bringing their grandkids, right? So it's a you know, we've been in existence for over 90 years. And so we have a lot of families that have made a tradition out of coming here to the orchard. And so it is a huge, I mean, it is our entire business, basically, having a retail experience for people to come, both in the summer when we have summer events, but obviously the fall is the biggest time of the year when people want to come to an apple orchard.
And so the way you run it is, it's really a full operation. Of course, you grow a lot of different kinds of food. You have the apple trees, the greenhouses, the high tunnels. But for the tourists this time of year, you also have the cafe, wagon rides, desserts. So while the farm is the biggest and certainly the most visible and most important part of it, you're also a destination. And so if you didn't have that, you wouldn't be the business that you are.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a farmer, you kind of choose what, like any industry, you choose what niche you're interested in. But I think also in the fruit and vegetable industry, it's becoming more and more necessary as a farm to be involved in retail if you want to make farming sustainable. And so that's just something that we, so yes, it is very much, you know, we are a farming operation, and we definitely incorporate that in everything we do. Like I said, we, our cafe, we're using apples from our orchard. We're trying to utilize, we also work with a lot of other local farms. For example, our meats come from local farms. If you eat at our grill on Saturday, you know, the chips come from an Indiana chip place, and the meat all comes from Indiana farms. But so we're also using, we really believe in sort of networking with other farms and providing people with an opportunity to experience all of Indiana agriculture when they come here.
So Tuttle Orchards goes back decades to when your great-grandfather, Roy Tuttle, planted the first trees in the late 20s. For how many years was it just another farm, like a lot of other farms in the area, before the tourist operation started?
Yeah, I think back in 1928 when he planted the first trees, really there was, it was in a very rural area, and all, you know, it was very normal back then for every, you know, homeowner to have a few apple trees in their backyard. They would make their own apple stuff and can it. And they really had no need to go to an apple orchard because everybody was doing their own little subsistence farming for what they needed, right? That was just pretty much normal. And so actually when he planted 10 acres of apple trees, his neighbors thought he was crazy. Like, what are you going to do with all these apples? And so for the first while, those apples were shipped to Chicago and made into vinegar, or they were not sold here just because all his neighbors had apples. They didn't necessarily need more apples. And there was a little bit of selling to different small grocery stores or small elementary schools. But it was just a different time and a different era in which a lot of people were already farming. It was, you know, or already growing their own food, had a very big garden, were doing their own canning. But over the years, as that has changed and people move, are a little bit more disconnected from agriculture or not, you know, and agriculture also becomes much more specialized. You know, people began to come to the farm probably in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and the 70s a little bit more. And over the last, I would say, since 1990s, we've really seen a drastic increase in the interest in people coming to the farm. I think as people become, you know, move into jobs and, you know, just a different time period of life where not everyone is directly involved in agriculture on a day-to-day basis.
So then when did the family kind of decide to own it and add the cafe and all these fun things like the mazes and the fall treats to really make it sort of this experience?
Yeah, so that's sort of been a gradual process over a period of many years, right? We, as a family, really, we sit down at the end of every season and kind of just talk about what are our customers asking for, what are our staff telling us that are the things people are asking for or needing. And so it just sort of evolves and changes over time, right? And so I think probably in the 90s, we first added a corn maze and then a play area. And over the years, that has grown a little bit. And then the cafe has been a more recent addition in the last 3 to 5 years of having, because we really see a trend moving to, in the sense of agritourism used to be coming to get apples and going home to cook and make them. And now I definitely see a movement more toward, we want to come and experience the food that you're growing right here and eat it while we're here at the farm rather than going home and cooking it. And so that just seems to be a trend that I see, you know, the foodie tourism and this foodie culture that we have, it seems to be moving in that direction. And so that was sort of, that's a more recent addition.
Now that makes perfect sense. So a big thing now, and I see it on social media all the time, is it you know, Instagram culture. People going places definitely to experience them, but also to certainly get a nice picture and post it for whatever their reasons may be. Has this made
Yes.
you and the staff more mindful to aesthetics, like making sure everything is just so, or having enough sheaves of corn or pumpkin displays in the right places, things like that?
I think it's just a part of, I think if you're involved in retail agriculture, or even before the Instagram culture, it's a part of opening your farm. It's just like opening your home to people. You want to make sure that it's clean and looks nice. And it's the same sort of thing, right? You want to create a safe environment where people can have fun. And I think that's always been sort of part of, it's just part of retail agriculture, right? But I definitely see this movement toward, you know, we used to say, my dad jokes that, you know, it used to be we wanted to come buy 5 bushel of apples, and then we wanted to buy a peck of apples to make up, you know, one pie. And now we don't really necessarily care if we get apples. We just need a picture of a picking the apples, right? Like, but it is a change in our culture, right? And I see today's culture much more wanting to experience the apples while they're here, in the sense of having slushies and caramel apples and those kind of things. So it just is a change in the way agriculture is, and that will continue to be, right? In 10 years, it will be different than it is now.
For us, this is a charming time of year, but for farmers, it's busy and it's stressful. I can only imagine what it's like for you or any other family who runs an operation like this. You've been at this your whole life. Do you feel like you've ever gotten to really enjoy the fall like the rest of us?
Yeah, I mean, it's different, right? But I think at the same time that it is the crazy busy time of the year, it's also the time of the year that you get to interact with the most people coming to experience the orchard, and you hear people's, you know, appreciation for your hard work that you don't necessarily hear in January when you're out there trimming trees and it's freezing cold outside. So I think it's like anything in life. There are blessings and there are challenges, and there are good parts and there are challenging parts. But it's an opportunity to bring on a whole seasonal staff that we get to know and care for and see their joy in being a part of the operation. So I think, you know, like every job, there are challenges and there are good parts. But we probably experience fall in a different way than maybe some people will, but there are definitely good parts as well.
She's a fourth-generation member of the Tuttle family who founded Tuttle Orchards. If you want to know more, you can visit IndianapolisOrchard.com. Good for you. I'm grabbing that URL, by the way. Or you can visit them. They're between McCordsville and Greenfield, just east of Indianapolis. Closed Sundays. Ruth Ann Roney, thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Up next, we'll hear from another farm that really owns its role as a fall tourism destination, and later, a rural Indiana farm that started up a simple pumpkin festival that has since gone on for over 30 years. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to our show on Indiana harvest festivals, I want to tell you about the show we did yesterday. Our friends down the hall at Side Effects Public Media just launched a new podcast called Sick, and it tells the fascinating and disturbing story of an Indianapolis fertility doctor who used his own sperm in treatments. You can hear that show and the new Side Effects podcast wherever you get your podcasts. For our show, just search All In Indiana. For their show, search Sick Podcast or visit sickpodcast.org. Back now to the lighter fare of Indiana farms creating tourism destinations this time of year. Jim Finley is the agritourism manager at Beasley's Orchard in Danville, Indiana. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So what does an agritourism manager do?
So I wear many hats, pretty much, you know, just making sure that everybody has a good time when they come out and they visit our farm in the fall. And, you know, we like to teach people where their food comes from, and, you know, really give them that like close up experience about food, farming, and, you know, how it can be a lot of fun.
So a lot of times these fall festivals and harvest festivals and these farms, orchards that have these things going on this time of year, you show up, you walk around, you do your own thing, but you kind of give tours.
Yeah, so we have about 7,000 school kids that'll come through our farm every fall, and we teach these kids, you know, how we pick apples, how apples grow, how pumpkins grow. We show them what we do with the apples once they're picked and how they basically go from a seedling to our farm market.
How long has Beasley's Orchard been around?
Beasley's Orchard has actually been around since 1946.
And how long has it been sort of this fall destination that it is now?
So over the years, you know, we've been getting larger and larger, adding more and more events throughout the whole year. But we actually just wrapped up our 33rd annual Heartland Apple Festival.
What is the Apple Festival? What do you do?
So that's our main fall weekend. That's where, you know, we have a bunch of people come out and we have our 8-acre corn maze. We have hay rides to the U-Pick pumpkin patch. We have U-Pick apples. We have apple cannons where you can launch a couple of apples and puppet show, live music, pony rides through the orchard. And it's, you know, just kind of a really fun 2-weekend event just to celebrate the fall harvest and have everybody come out and kind of harvest their share of not only what we grow, but family memories as well.
So that's at the beginning of October, the first couple of weekends of October, but you're open through the month of October with the usual fall festival, right?
Yes, exactly. So we have fall festival style weekends from mid-September all the way through October. And then we've got this other weekend coming up, Dog Days at the Maze. This will be, I believe, our 9th year doing it. And, you know, it's kind of our way of having all the fall fun, but adding a different theme where we give back to the local animal rescue groups that are in our area. And, you know, we give 50% of our maize proceeds back to those animal rescue groups that are able to come to the orchard at that time. And when they do come to the orchard, they bring dogs that are looking for forever homes. So it's, you know, nice to kind of aid in their mission, you know, to help with dogs. And then our final Halloween weekend is our last weekend in October. And, you know, that's just kind of our last rally to kind of wrap things up and, you know, have a bunch of families come out and pick their Halloween pumpkin.
So lots of fun, lots of good causes, but I want to come back to something you said earlier. Did you say apple cannon?
Yes. Yes, I did. That's our newest fall attraction. And it is, you know, tons of fun. Kids love it. Dads love it. You know, basically everybody loves it. It's kind of hard not to enjoy just launching apples at some targets and watching them splat.
So what is that? What are you doing? What do they look like? And do you pay to use them? What's going on?
So, yeah, we've got four about 6-foot long, basically apple cannons, if you will. They look just like a cannon. We use about 100 PSI compressed air. And you load up an apple, and then you push in the plunger, and then you let it rip.
I hate to be the buzzkill here, but I'm sure somebody has said, so has anyone ever complained about that? Does anyone ever say, hey, you're wasting perfectly good apples?
Yes, actually they do. And they are not really perfectly good apples. Lots of apples drop from the tree onto the ground. And, you know, so we'll use some of those. And then also, you know, the goal of us growing apples is to be able to sell them in the market. You know, that's a large part of how we can operate our farm year after year. And we've just simply come to the point where there are few apple varieties that don't really sell that well. And we were kind of wondering, you know, like what to do with these apples, you know, since we have them. So we figured that we would, you know, kind of use them in a fun, unique way to just add a little bit more to our fall fun.
Halloween target practice. I love it. All right, so let's go back to apples. You grow a huge variety of apples. I love a good apple eaten out of hand. I have a Fuji on my desk I'm going to dig into right after the show. So I have to ask, what are some of your personal favorites?
So we grow 27 different apple varieties at the orchard. And I would say that Honeycrisp is my favorite, and it's also a favorite of, you know, like lots of other customers that come out. It has a thin skin. It's really light and crispy, like sweet, if you will. And you can just kind of tell, like, right away when you take first bite that it's not really like any other apple. So Honeycrisp is my favorite, but, you know, like, tons of other people have their own favorites. Some people like kind of more of a well-rounded tartness to their apples. You know, it's nice that we grow so many apple varieties that we can, you know, make many people happy based on what they prefer.
And you say that you have the best apple cider in Indiana. Is that an official designation or just a claim?
So that is actually not what we say. We won the 2019 best apple cider in the state at the Indiana Horticulture Congress. And that's where, you know, like all the local farmers in the area, they all meet up and then we'll, you know, kind of like share tips and tricks as far as newer apple varieties and things like that. We all kind of help each other and we share. And that's where, you know, lots of different orchards will bring their cider. And then all of the guests at that meeting sample all the cider, and then they're the ones that actually vote. So not only do we think it's the best, but fortunately, many, many other people feel the same way.
Do you know what goes into the selection? What makes a good cider?
So for us, what we find is we have a blend of about 6 or 7 different apple varieties. You know, some tart, some sweet. We find that some cider is a little too sweet, whereas some is a little too tart. And we pride ourselves in, you know, kind of towing that fine line just to make a well-rounded, like, flavor for the cider.
So I've heard that some of the corn mazes haven't worked out for a lot of harvest festivals this year because of the wet spring. But yours is up, and it looks great. Amazing, actually. When you look at it from the air, you can see writing. I would imagine maybe you can read it from a plane. What's it look like?
So this year our maize theme is actually mentioning how we've been harvesting family memories for 3 generations. Calvin Beasley is Beasley's Orchard owner, and the farm has just recently been passed down to him from his mother and his father. So our maize this year, you know, just kind of highlights kind of who we are and what we have. It features our Civil War era barn market. It features a hayride. It features apple cannons. It has an apple tree, you know, and it's just kind of a way to show all of our fall fun and a way to say, you know, thank you, everybody, you know, for coming here year after year and giving us that opportunity to celebrate our 3-generation ownership.
So how do you make that maze? It's intricate. It's detailed. I couldn't imagine doing it from the ground.
Yeah. So most people think that you wait until the corn is really tall and then, you know, you walk through and like mow it or something like that. But so how it actually works is in late June, when the corn is about 6 inches tall, we'll have someone come out and their phone will actually show them where to walk based on our path that we want for this year. And they'll actually kill all of the corn in that path. So they'll spray all in those paths, and then all that corn will die while the rest of the corn continues to grow up, leaving all of those paths.
And so your phone kind of navigates? There's some sort of there's an app for that?
Oh, yeah. There's an app for, you know, just about everything. And actually, you know, more and more phone application types of things are constantly being implemented into the agricultural scene. And so, you know, it's actually really cool to see these tools, you know, help farmers, you know, do what they do. So, yeah, it's really neat. Their phone, you know, will tell them to turn left, turn right, all that stuff. And then when they're done, leaves us with a very nice, fun looking maze.
And how is it working for Calvin? And remember, you're on the radio.
Oh, Calvin loves it. We all love him. You know, Calvin's our leader. He's had to learn a whole lot about like farming and everything, you know, because we grow tons of different items on the farm. Not only, you know, in the fall do we highlight pumpkins and apples, but, you know, we're a farm market from mid-May all the way through the year. So we grow pick your own strawberries. We grow tomatoes, sweet corn, watermelon, cucumber, squash, asparagus, and, you know, on and on and on. And, you know, so he has to keep his eye on all of these different things, you know, that need to be maintained at like certain times throughout the season, like harvested throughout the season and all that. So he's done a very good job, and we've been working really hard over the years, and we just can't wait to add a little bit more and more each year.
Jim Finley, agritourism manager at Beasley's Orchard in Danville, thank you for your time and good luck the next couple weekends.
Well, yeah. Thank you guys very much for the call. And yeah, you know, hopefully you guys can make it out, as, you know, we still have a few more weeks of fall fun.
We're now going to head to St. Leon, Indiana, where I was delighted to find out that the pumpkin festival I went to as a kid is still held every year. Lobenstein Farm holds it, and one of the family members joins us now. Stephanie Lobenstein-Smith, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, when is the Lobenstein Farm Pumpkin Festival?
It goes on this weekend, Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 7. It's the last of the three weekends that we're having it. It normally goes on the first three full weekends of October at our family farm.
And how long has your family farm been hosting it?
My grandfather, Eugene Lobenstein, started this 31 years ago.
Wow. So the one I remember as a kid must have been one of the first ones.
Probably so.
How long has the farm been growing pumpkins?
Years. My grandpa started growing pumpkins and selling them to retailers in the Cincinnati area. I just remember going as a kid to deliver pumpkins to different stores throughout Cincinnati. So it's been a long time.
So are these just jack-o'-lantern pumpkins? Are some of them used for food? Do you grow a lot of varieties?
We grow all kinds of varieties. One of our secrets is we do not grow all of our pumpkins in the same location. In case if a hailstorm would come, that could damage the pumpkin. So we plant in many different locations, and at the festival, we will haul them to the main field. So that's one of our secrets is we plant all around, and there's all different kinds. There's white pumpkins, there's mini pumpkins, there's big pumpkins, all different kinds to choose from.
So your family knows a lot about growing pumpkins. I remember a few years back, I want to say 2013 or 2014, pumpkins were scarce that year. Do you know what makes a bad year for pumpkins?
No rain.
No rain. Okay,
the
so they need a lot of water.
And the heat. The heat this year really hurt our pumpkins. It made them soft. So the heat and no rain is awful for pumpkins.
But you've got enough this year to put on the festival.
Oh, yeah. We have plenty.
So you're a nurse. That's your day job. But do you still help out at the family farm?
We do. Myself and my brother and sister and my two cousins, we all still help. And now our children are there helping on the farm as well.
So what do you do at the festival then?
I typically work on the front porch where I take orders, food orders. We have fried chicken. We have homemade chili, green beans and ham. We have hot dogs, Mets, brats. And the specialty is really our homemade pumpkin pie and pumpkin rolls.
So right there on the front porch? That is so homey.
Right on the front porch. It's my grandparents' house. And yeah, we serve right off the front porch. And the chicken is fried right next to the porch, and we also have homemade french fries. They cut the potatoes right there and then throw them right in the fryers.
So the first three weekends of October in your life are kind of spoken for, right?
Yes.
Kind of have to plan your life around it.
Exactly.
Do you know about how many people come to the Pumpkin Festival every year, maybe on a given weekend?
A couple thousand.
Wow.
Yeah. So small little town of St. Leon.
And everybody comes from all around.
They do.
What else is there besides pumpkins at the Pumpkin Festival? You mentioned some of the food.
A lot of people come for the food. We also have kids' games, and there's a little kid tractor ride that the kids can go on. We also have a hay maze made out of large hay bales. This year, unfortunately, we do not have the corn maze due to the amount of rain we had this spring. We weren't able to get the field planted to do the corn maze. So unfortunately this year there's no corn maze, but next year. And then also there's farm animals for people to go and see. There's also a hay ride on antique tractors out to the pumpkin patch to pick your own pumpkins.
Well, okay, so let's go back to the corn maze. Obviously a corn maze it's kind of a novelty, but there are fields near my house that didn't get anything planted in them this year because of the wet spring. How serious a problem was that for your farm, for maybe things that you're growing actually for food and not just a maze?
It was pretty bad this year. We were, like I said, able to plant something in the field. We planted soybeans, but a lot of our produce did not go in time. So we normally have sweet corn by July 4th. We didn't have any sweet corn until probably the middle to late of July. So a lot of produce went in late, so we didn't have our early crops.
And farmers talk to other farmers. Is there anyone in your area who's had a particularly bad year or a hard time because of the bad weather this season?
Yeah, there around southeast Indiana, there's a lot of fields that didn't get planted at all. They weren't able to even get anything in. So yeah, it's been a pretty bad year for farmers.
So I know Lobenstein Farm grows a variety of produce, which you sell at farmers markets and other outlets throughout the area. That's kind of your main business. But how much does the farm depend on the Pumpkin Festival to say, pay its bills?
We don't count on it just because we don't know year to year how the pumpkins are going to do.
So it's just kind of a bonus and a fun
sure.
bonus at that, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have fun doing it.
Friends and neighbors and everyone coming by. And like I said, it just seems like a really sort of a homey celebration with, you know, selling chili off the porch and going for hay rides. Sounds wonderful.
Yeah. We have a lot of repeat customers, you can say. And now they come and they said, I remember coming as a kid. We've been here almost every year since I was a kid, and now I'm bringing my own kids. So it's a good family tradition of a lot of people in the area.
Stephanie Lobenstein-Smith, she's from Lobenstein Farms in St. Leon, Indiana, and they put on the annual Pumpkin Festival. This weekend's the last weekend for it this year. Stephanie, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll hear from Cindy Dudley. She's the manager at Waterman's Family Farm on the southeast side of Indianapolis. We'll find out how they've managed to keep their farm and the family for over 140 years and what goes into their own fall festival they throw every year. And Cindy will join us live. So let us know where you've been this year. What have you done? How have you celebrated the season? Do you load up on apples or pumpkins this time of year? Or do you just love everything autumn? If it isn't totally apparent, I do too. So let's celebrate the season together. Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about fall and the many harvest festivals that pop up around the state this time of year. Family farms earning a little extra income by inviting us over, selling pumpkins and produce, and providing a quintessential autumn experience, whether it's picking apples, taking a hayride, choosing a pumpkin, or navigating a corn maze. What's your favorite fall memory? Maybe your proudest pumpkin? Tweet us or comment on our Facebook page, and we'd love to hear from you. And dig up pictures if you haven't. We're sharing it on social media at All In Indiana. Joining us live in the studio now is Cindy Dudley. She's the manager at Waterman's Family Farm on the southeast side of Indianapolis. Hi, Cindy.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined by her husband, Tim Dudley. He's a dentist here in town, and he also helps out on the farm this time of year. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Thanks a bunch.
So, Cindy, Waterman's Family Farm is on Raymond Street, just inside Indianapolis's 465 Loop. You have your fall festival through Halloween. About how many people make it out every year?
Well, for an example, this was a record-breaking weekend. On Sunday, we had over 3,000 people.
The weather really helped?
The weather helped, and the fact that the Colts had a bye weekend, I believe, on Sunday. That was a huge help.
So you see those factors come into play?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. I remember I came last year. The weather was awful, but we still had a great time.
Yeah. The kids love the rain. There's something about going into a wet pumpkin patch.
Well, we certainly did that. Now, let's first talk about the farm. Quick overview. What does Waterman's grow?
Well, we start the end of May, always around race weekend, with strawberries. After strawberries, we have sugar snap peas. We have two different variety of green beans. We have beets, which, fun fact, back in the 1500s, women would use beet juice to dye their hair. Fast forward several centuries, and we're now using beet juice to dye our Easter eggs. So I love beets. And then we have peppers. We have several different types of peppers. Of course, Waterman's is really known for their sweet corn. And right now, we have more tomatoes. We just opened up our tomato patch for picking.
And so, you didn't used to allow you pick tomatoes, right?
No. No, tomatoes and corn are the two vegetables that we normally do not open up for picking, never corn.
Why is that?
Well, with, you know, we sell a lot of our sweet corn, not only in our market, but we have other farmer markets that will get our sweet corn. And plus, people, they don't know when sweet corn's ready to be picked. For instance, on one stalk of corn, you would think there would be 6 or 7 ears. There's one, sometimes 2 ears of corn.
Mm. So. How was the corn this year? It was a rough year for corn.
It was wonderful.
It was wonderful.
It was good. All of our crops kind of came in late. So, you know, like now we still have green tomatoes.
Really?
Yes.
In the middle of October?
In the middle of October.
And you're the largest U-pick farm in the city.
Yes.
So what does that mean? Is it Marion County? Is it inside 465? What are we talking about?
Well, we are right. We're 20 minutes from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So we're right on the inside of 465.
But when you say you're the largest U-pick farm in the city, who are you comparing to? I mean, you don't have to name names, but.
There's been a lot of.
There are some blueberry farms around and things like that,
right,
where you can go and you pick.
Right.
And you have all kinds of stuff.
And we have all kinds of stuff. Right now, we are currently picking our turnip greens, mustard greens, and, of course, our pumpkins.
Mm-hmm. And people from different food cultures pick different things. I understand you see a lot of people who are originally from India.
Yes.
What are they picking?
Well, I've been noticing them picking greens, which in the past I would notice them picking peppers. But what is so, you know, my favorite time of year, because I love to go out on the hayride and see people out picking their own food, but they're in their traditional wear, which, you know,
is
nice.
You narrate a few of the hayrides at the farm.
Yes, I do.
Okay. So what are some of your go-to facts that you like to share when you're driving around?
Well, you know, I like to tell everyone that the farm was actually started in 1870 by Christian Waterman, and it's been in the Waterman family ever since.
So 150 years is next year.
Yes. No, we just celebrated our 100th year.
Oh, 100th year. Okay.
Yes. But Mr. Waterman actually started farming there in 1978.
And this was Bruce Waterman?
Yes, sir.
Who we just lost last year.
In December of this year, yes.
Yeah. How did that affect the farm?
Well, you know, it was, of course, it was a sad time for all of us. He, died of cancer, and it's something that took him really very fast. And I think he found out the end of September and passed away in December. We were lucky enough to have Bernardo Gonzalez, who is our farmer now. He had worked with Mr. Waterman, from the age of 21, I believe.
How old is Bernardo now?
Well, he started farming with us in 1996.
Oh, so that was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. He's a great guy. And I was talking with him earlier today, and I said, well, what can you think of what Mr. Waterman shared with you? And he said, well, you always look a man directly in the eye, and you always look behind your tractor. So I thought that was nice.
So Bernardo's been with you for, I guess, over 25 years now.
Yes.
Or around 25 years, I suppose. What's his story?
Well, he came here from Mexico as a young man and happened to stop by the farm and was talking with Mr. Waterman. And I think Mr. Waterman saw something in him that he said, I think this is a good guy.
Now he's running the operation.
He is. He's our main farmer. And there's a lot more that he does. I mean, we've got, you know, so many tractors and all the farm equipment. So he really has a lot of them on his shoulders, but he's doing a fantastic job.
And I understand he just sort of somewhat recently got citizenship.
Yes, 3 years ago.
3 years ago,
yes.
U.S. citizenship. So what kind of journey was that to get his citizenship? Did the farm help out in any way?
Well, they did. A lot of people kind of coached him and helped him with, the study. So we all just, you know, encouraged him.
So let's come back to the farm. What is the benefit of choosing U-pick produce over just going to the grocery store?
Well, it's fresh.
It's fresher.
Yes, it's fresher. I think, you know, if you're picking your own vegetables, it's cost effective. It's not as expensive as what you buy. For instance, a 5-gallon bucket of greens is $9. So that's a lot of greens that will fit in a 5-gallon bucket.
Mm.
So I think it's just the opportunity to go out and, it's one of the things with the hayrides with the school groups. You know, a lot of kids, they don't know where their food comes from. So our hayride is very educational. We like to point out all of our crops that we're growing and, talk a little bit about the crops and kids find that fascinating.
And as we said, you narrate the hay rides. And when people give tours, they always love questions. What are some of the more memorable questions you've been asked? And what do you like to be asked about on the hay rides?
Well, just this morning I was on a hay ride and I had a young boy said, "Why are pumpkins orange?"
Okay.
And I thought that was interesting. And, you know, it's like the leaves on a tree are green and then they turn orange and they turn yellow. It's, you know, it's a seasonal.
And not all pumpkins are orange.
No, we have some green pumpkins. They're green before they turn orange. And, well, there's all types of pumpkins now. We have white pumpkins.
And you grow all kinds?
Yes. They're at our Raymond Street location. We have 50 acres, but all in all, we have over 200 acres that we farm. And we actually have another festival in Greenwood. Mm. It's a smaller festival. It's right off of 37, and it's really geared towards toddlers, but it's a beautiful piece of property. It's very quiet, very peaceful. Hay rides to the pumpkin patch. So we have fairly large pumpkin patch there as well.
And so you grow pumpkins in multiple places.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Which we heard from our last guest is kind of their strategy as well, because you never know when a patch is going to get hit by hail.
Yes, yes.
So let's see. Let's go back. Waterman's Family Farm is the oldest farm we've talked about on the show today. It started in the late 1800s, although can you tell me about the house that's on the property?
Well, the interesting fact, the farmhouse, as you pull in to our farm, used to be at the very back of the property by a mulberry tree. So Mr. Waterman had shared some stories when he was a little kid. He would eat the mulberries, go in, and his mother would say, "I know you've been in that mulberry tree." Well, the house now has been moved to the front of the property. I'm not quite sure at what point in time they moved the house, but that's one of the facts that we like to point out as we're on our hayride.
That an entire house was moved from one side to the other. I wonder what the necessity was for that. You say you haven't heard when it happened.
No,
you probably
I know,
haven't heard why either.
Well, that our strawberry patch is located there now.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they needed room for the strawberries.
It seems like a strange reason to move an entire house to put in a strawberry patch. I'm sure that wasn't it. Okay, so the numbers are in. The people have spoken. We just got the results of our best apple poll. We only put three on the poll. 20% went to Gala. 10% went to Granny Smith. Nobody said Jonathan. 70%, you can probably guess.
Honeycrisp.
Yep, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Everybody loves Honeycrisp. Also, Bill from Twitter says, "My favorite fall memory is going camping with my father's extended family in Brown County and Chena Lakes State Park." How do you enjoy – how long have you been working for Waterman?
6 years.
Okay, so you – not a terribly long time, but a good enough long time. How do you enjoy the fall?
Oh, I love the fall. It's my favorite time. You know, I like we have a lot of children that come, and just to see their faces when they see the pumpkin patch, and we point out the greens. And, of course, our main attraction is Tyranny, our pumpkin-eating dinosaur. When the pumpkin-eating dinosaur wakes up for her daily pumpkin, which we do several, you know, on the hour during the day,
sure.
The kids come running, and it is it's just a sight to see.
Tim. I understand that you have something to do with the pumpkin chomping dinosaur. You're a dentist here in town. what do you do with Tyranny?
Well, the funny part was that evidently she broke several teeth, and so terrible thing. And so they asked me if I could come do a house call. So I showed up and I took a look. I said, "Well, yeah, I could fix her up." And so I mixed up some stuff and fixed her up, and then bleached her teeth too, just to give her a little makeover. So she's looking good.
Tim, in your 30 years as a dentist, how many apple-related injuries have you seen?
Zero.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah?
The best part about an apple is that for the little one, it's a great way to get rid of loose baby teeth.
Okay, yeah. I can see that.
Eat that apple.
Okay, well, I wonder if that negates my next question. My two front teeth are crowned, but I love apples. Am I in danger? Am I in any kind of danger?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
You know, if anything else, just get your knife out and just cut it up in pieces.
There we go.
Yeah.
Cindy, we took our then one-year-old to the farm last year, and he loved feeding the animals. What animals do you have on site?
Oh, we have goats. We have baby goats. They have a bird sanctuary, a llama, camels, pony rides.
And you can you sell little cups of vegetables?
Yes.
You can just feed the animals right out of your hand?
You can feed the animals. With our farm, there's a lot of things to do. Now, we do have Stallhead Amusement, which have been with the Watermans for several years. Jeff Stallhead is quite the character. He has several different various rides there, but one of the most popular is called The Beast, and it's a blow-up walk-through maze. And, you know, you finally get to the center and you're hearing the thump, thump, thump of a heartbeat. So,
and it's something you can't miss if you're driving over the bridge and you look down in the farm and there's this giant orange blob. What is that, depending on the time of year?
Yes.
It's really, really something. And as a kid, I remember going through a straw bale maze that a family friend put together. And that was one of my favorite fall memories ever. And so I was delighted to find out that you have one of those.
Yes.
Here's my question. Are grown-ups allowed in there?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what's pumpkin bowling?
Pumpkin bowling is you are actually using a pumpkin to roll and knock over some bowling pins that we have. We have pumpkin bowling, and then we also have a spinning pumpkin.
Mm.
We have, naturally, our cornfield maze. We have a basketball and football toss. But another favorite of mine is the straw mountain. The straw mountain is just it's a huge mountain of straw. And I always tell families that it's just a wonderful photo opportunity on the Straw Mountain. And we've set up lots of areas around the farm, you know, for families to get their autumn photos.
So for farmers and for people who work on a farm like yourself, this is a crucial and very busy time of year. You have a farm and a festival to run. But how do the people who are there enjoy the season? Do you hear any from anyone, any stories? Do people go out or do they just rest when there's not something going on?
No, we you mean at the farm?
Yeah, people who work at the farm.
Well, we close October 31st, and I've had a lot of customers say, why don't you sell Christmas trees? And and I say, well, you know,
We need a break.
We started in May and we're ending at the end of October. And I think with like a lot of other farmers, we start planning for the next year. You know, what can we improve on? And then we just take a little rest.
This has been such a delight. How long has the Fall Festival been going on at Watermans?
We started September the 28th, and we will continue until October 31st. We're open Tuesday through Sunday from 9 a.m. The last hayride during the week is at 6 p.m. on the Friday and Saturday, 7 p.m. Now, the festival itself is not open on Monday, but we do allow people to come out if they want to walk to the pumpkin patch. They're able to do so on Mondays.
I understand that the festival itself has really only been going on officially for about 10 years, right?
No, a little bit longer.
A little
than
longer
that.
Than that?
Yes, just a little longer than that. It actually started with the Waterman family and their neighbors and friends coming out and taking a tractor ride out to the pumpkin patch. And it just started growing and growing. And they said, hey, I think we have something here.
Let's invite people out.
Let's invite people. And then the festival every year, you know, seems to get a little bigger, more and more attractions.
Cindy Dudley, she's the manager at Waterman's Family Farm, where they're holding their annual fall festival through Halloween on the southeast side of Indy. Cindy, thank you so much for coming
thank
in.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
And Tim Dudley, Cindy's husband, he's a dentist and he helps out at the festival. Tim, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross and Chris Flood. Adam Gross also composed our theme music. We're going to make him the BJ Lederman of Indiana Public Broadcasting. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it wherever you get podcasts. Join us tomorrow when we'll be talking about financial aid. The 2020 FAFSA just opened last week. How can students better navigate all that paperwork to get the aid they need? And if you have anything that you'd care to share about your experiences with the financial aid process, we'd love to hear from you. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. We're back tomorrow for that conversation. I'm Matt Pelser. Thank you for listening. This is All In.